You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website, kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Governance and Policy Committee meets quarterly on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
Well, yes, hi, this is Rocker T passing through. You know, when I'm in Portland, checking for 90.7 KBOO, for real. This is the One Love Jam down with a DJ like Ja Will, for real. Now my selector!
Good morning and welcome to That Vegan Show. Today we are going to talk with some of my classmates from National University of Natural Medicine. We were all in a nutrition program together, so I'm really excited to kind of reunite with them and hear what they've been doing and get some great information on nutrition. So we have Leah Nadler. She is a clinical nutritionist and founder of and owner of Fabulous Healing Nutrition and Wellness. She started Fabulous Healing Nutrition and Wellness to help female leaders eliminate their gut and skin issues without yo-yo dieting so they can glow. And I've seen a lot of evidence on that on her page of a lot of glowing and increase their energy and confidence and attract more success to their business and personal life. And we also have Will Benitez. He is the owner of, and head nutritionist of On Pace Wellness. His practice focuses on optimizing nutrition for improved health, wellness, and performance. He is also a certified running coach and a sports nutrition adjunct university instructor. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks, it's a pleasure.
This will be a really great show. Give me some reminders of some of our work, our coursework together. Leah, how did you become interested in nutrition?
So my journey starts back in 2008, a little bit after my older son was born, and I hit rock bottom with my energy, a chronic fatigue. I had anemia that no matter how many supplements and how much meat I used to eat, just didn't go away. And there was a huge gap between what I wanted to do in my head, all the missions and tasks, and you know, I wanted to do more in life, to what my body actually allowed me to do. I was really, really fatigued all the time. Even cleaning up the house was an impossible task, not to mention taking care of a baby, etc. And then I was introduced to a whole food plant-based diet, and within 3 weeks all the symptoms that I had just went away, and I couldn't even believe that there is a connection between what I eat to how I feel, because I thought that my diet is perfect. I used to live in Israel. We used to eat what we call the average Mediterranean diet, whole foods, fish, lean meat, etc. So I said, what is wrong with my diet that can cause me feel this way? It didn't register in my head. And when I saw the improvement, it was, the moment that I said, okay, I'm going back to school and no one should ever feel like this if there is a simple solution. And here I am today.
That's a great story. And I read testimonials like that all the time on the internet, like, went to a whole foods plant-based diet and got off half the medicines under doctors, care, of course. And, people just can't believe it. And it's really nice to hear like the story personally from someone. Will, what got you started in nutrition?
Yeah, and Liat, what a wonderful story, and so glad that you found food and nutrition to heal, because we know, the three of us, how healing and powerful it can be, but often so many people unfortunately don't ever learn that lesson or learn it very late, sometimes too late. So yeah, just great that you had that experience. For me, I didn't have a personal health issue that brought me to food and nutrition. But I do think that growing up, my family's history around illness definitely impacted just my perception of health and wellness. And then I think I just naturally started gravitating toward food as my area or place where I can kind of make sense of health and wellness. You know, in my family, diabetes is very common, and with that, high blood pressure, and you know, being overweight or obese, and there's, you know, alcohol issues in some parts of the family, and a lot of other things, you know, from smoking, and just surrounded by it, you know, my whole life. And so I think in high school, just being a very, very active and conscious person in that way, really interested me in health and being healthy. And maybe, you know, I wanted to look healthy and look strong and look fit and all that kind of stuff. But then in college, I think as I started to engage in other lifestyle behaviors, I quickly realized, you know, that you know, I was starting to become unhealthy and feel unhealthy. Again, no true health concern, but, you know, I was gaining weight and I wasn't really feeling my best self. And all the while, I was trying to exercise and be a healthy person, but I didn't feel it. I was actually going the opposite way. So as much as I ran and tried to be active, everything was just going the other way. I was, you know, my sleep habits were awful. I was gaining weight, like I said. I was just not feeling myself. And so it kind of reignited this passion in food and nutrition. And luckily, only a year and a half or 2 years of that happened. And then I started reading, becoming a self-learner on food and nutrition. And then it brought me to plant-based eating, similar to Liat's journey, eventually finding that. And I started with vegetarian. You know, my girlfriend now, my wife, actually, we decided to go vegetarian together. And we did that for several months. And then I came across, at least for me, very inspiring individuals via books and documentaries, such as Scott Jurek and Rich Roll, and then books like Food Inc. and Forks Over Knives. And then it led me, us actually, to decide to take that next step and go vegan, and within vegan, try to be as whole food plant-based as we could. So it was definitely a progression, definitely a journey, still on that journey. And from there, it's just kind of, you know, turned into many different interests and passions. But yeah, that's the story as of now that led me to where I am.
And yeah, that sounds like that had a huge impact on opening your own business to help other people do the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, again, just having that very active athlete type background and interests, and then seeing other people, you know, at the time, for example, Nomad Athlete was becoming a really big blog and kind of like online space for individuals at the time, like myself. And so I think I just got a lot of inspiration from what was happening. I mean, you know, this was about 10 years ago, actually. Yeah, because I went vegan in 2012, summer of 2012. So actually might've been 11 because I was vegetarian first. And at the time, blogs, you know, were all the rage, and Nomad Athlete started out as a blog before it became much more than that. And people were still reading print books. And I think I was just really excited by the buzz around vegan and eating differently and eating healthier and feeling better. And everyone was kind of becoming more outspoken about it. And I was just soaking it all in. And now I just want to help other people.
That's great. As someone who would possibly like to start a business involving nutrition and, for myself, mental health, I was just wondering how it went starting the business. Like, Were there challenges? Or was it super easy?
What most people don't realize is having your own business is more than a full-time job. And this is the difference between having a fully operated, successful business to something that is some kind of a hobby, something on the side, something that I will do when I have the energy, when I have the right mood. This is what I noticed, because at the beginning, I was kind of in a dial between those two scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a business? Is it not? But when I finally committed, fully committed internally to the process and making sure that I'm sitting down, I do everything that I need to be out there to put myself, even if it's very uncomfortable. Sometimes it can be very, very uncomfortable. Just do it. Get the help that I need. Do it yourself will only get you some places.
Right.
If you take the help, you can go everywhere. Literally, you can climb the Everest and even more. You can go to the moon. Make sure that you get the help. And it's the same with, by the way, with nutrition journey or health journey or, you know, running a marathon or being an Olympic champion. It doesn't matter. Make sure that you have someone on your side, someone to get you where you want in a very short way or short time comparing to do it by yourself.
So maybe like a mentor or other types of support.
Mentors, coaches, even some professional containers. So I always make sure that I have some kind of professional support throughout the entire time since I graduated the master degree. Mm-hmm. Until now, I make sure that I surround myself with colleagues, with health professionals, that I have somebody to support me with decisions, with how to help my clients better, how to show up better, how to identify my own biases in the coaching process. I can only do so much by doing it by myself, and having some kind of container and support is very, very important.
Yeah, that's something that I think is really important for me and other people to hear if they're thinking about doing that. Has that been similar for you, Will?
Oh yeah, Liat's right. I mean, it's probably different across the board as far as the type of business, but I think there's a general theme there, which is that you're going to have better success and maybe quicker success if you do have those support systems in place, because it's hard, as we had started. It's not a hobby. If you treat it like a hobby and you want it to be a side hustle, by all means, maybe you can grow slow and take your time, and it's not, it's totally fine. But if you are wanting to, like I did and like Liat did, really, intend on making this your thing and your eventually your full-time job and your career, it does take a lot of energy and it takes a lot of time. Liat mentioned it's more than a full-time job because it is way more hours. It is hours all over the place. It is when you have an idea, you have to go to your computer and work on it a little bit, or you have to make connections and go to events outside of working hours on the weekend when maybe more events happen. You just have to be able to and willing to put in that kind of effort, make those connections. And then as Liat is talking about with support, figure out where. And if you don't know where, maybe you just need a mentor or coach or join a group. But if you know some areas of weakness, start there. If you know that I have the education, I have the passion, but I have no business skills, or I have no, financial background or footing, then okay, you have areas that maybe you should focus on. So that way it's not too overwhelming. And then you can do the same thing the other way around. But I do think that identifying those support places and early on is going to set you up for more success. But the one thing that I would highlight here, for me at least, was the importance of having a network that really helped me. I put a lot of energy when I was in school into building a network and fostering that network, and then staying in touch once those people and groups were in place, to make sure that I didn't stay out of touch and that they knew my name, if not my face. And it definitely led to opportunities once my business was up and running. And even if someone said, oh, I remember you reached out 2 years ago. Did you ever start that thing? Or are you still doing nutrition? I have someone who I might be interested in working with you. You know, I can't tell you how many times, especially early on when that came up. And they were random. It wasn't that, like that was happening every week. But that network definitely helped to support me in those sometimes shaky months. And the first couple of years are definitely kind of rocky sometimes. But again, it's having that support in place to get you through that time, and then you'll thrive. And fortunately, that's been the case.
That's another thing I was wondering. I think I know the answer, but once you have some of that foundation in place, I would suspect there's a decent demand for both of your services. You're offering a lot of things. You know, that's always the other question mark. Like, are there people who are going to be able, you know, want these services or be able to afford the services or stick with the services?
Okay, I can say loud and clear that as long as you are clear to who you serve, there will always be demand and there will always be people that are willing to pay for it. Just be clear with who you want to serve, especially, and I know that this is a little bit outside of our topic, but think about it. We finish school. We have so much to give, so many areas of knowledge and experience and education. We can help literally everyone from all ages, all kind of problems. However, how hard it is to find the right message that will speak to everybody out there. So if you know that you're talking to vegans, for example, or more specifically, I work with females, and more specifically, I work with result-driven women. So those who are in business, who have successful careers, who wants to have it all, right? I'm sure that Will can testify for himself. He works with athletes. He knows who he's speaking to. So of course there will be a demand, and of course there will be people that are willing to pay and pay big money.
Yeah, because sometimes you get the message that, you know, you can't support yourself on your own business. So that's where I was, I'm glad to hear that. And I think too with, I mean, there's so many benefits of putting out there, like you're saying, exactly what you want to do, because these are the things you're very passionate about. So that makes it a little bit easier to put in the hard work, having that passion behind it. And then also you can, you know, kind of be an expert in those areas instead of trying to do everything. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. The best advice that I got was from a friend / mentor as I was nearing the end of the program, the educational program. And she said, basically exactly as Liat just said, just use a different term, which is to know your niche. If you have your niche, if you know the specific group that you want to work with, you will grow faster and improve as a professional a lot quicker. The depth, I think, is in that case, more potent, more powerful than the breadth. And so with that, yeah, when I started practicing, I saw that. I was taking any client that came my way. Of course, I'm just starting out. Anyone who says, I'll pay you, come on, work with me. Like Liat said, I can help you. Maybe I won't do the best because that's not my area of true passion, but I can help that person be the next, you know, take that next step in their journey. So I felt enough confidence in that. But when I did decide finally, and it probably took at least a year to just accept my passion, where I feel my best, where I vibrate is with the active athlete population. And those who, you know, maybe you're not an elite athlete, but yeah, you embrace movement and you embrace athleticism in your life. then I started to grow the most, and I started to feel more excited about my work, and I strengthened my voice, as Leah is saying. So there is something to be said about to your question, Melissa, like people are gonna pay for that because they can feel it. They can feel that you know what you're talking about, that you bring the kind of passion that they want in hiring a coach. We all want a passionate coach if we're gonna have them support us. So when you live that passion, people will respond energetically, and that can be financial. I'll pay whatever. It can be I'll pay, but I'm also gonna promote you to everyone that I know because you are so great, and I can really tell that you know your stuff, and we're working so well together. So I think it really can kind of come back to you in abundance if you just follow that passion and listen to it and try not to do everything. The other thing is, from a practical standpoint, there are so many nutritionists and there's so many professionals. So you need to stand out, and standing out isn't doing everything. Standing out is being really good at one thing, maybe two things, and just shine there.
That makes a lot of sense. Kind of following up on that, Will, what kind of challenges do some of your clients have with nutrition or that you can kind of help work with them on?
Yeah. Well, I like to say that athletes are people, right? So they're going to definitely have the normal people issues, right? We all, generally speaking, don't sleep as much as we could, or don't sleep as well as we could. And a lot of us have gastrointestinal problems, increasingly so. And we all could drink more water. So there are these general things that people definitely present with, and I need to definitely support that and acknowledge it, because otherwise, if I just focus on the performance stuff, then I'm really not practicing in the way that I, one, was educated to believe in, and three, is actually effective, because I'm just completely ignoring them as a person. So there's the general stuff that kind of everyone can deal with. And then specifically, though, again, as a more of a performance type nutritionist, I see a lot of people, I work with a lot of runners and like I said, sport oriented people. So fueling is a term where it's not just food, but food related to their actual performance, timing that out correctly so that the body responds how it should respond for the amount of time that it should respond for. That's something that comes up. So what they eat before exercise or an event like a competition, during that, after that, this is something that, as you can imagine, if you're an athlete, you invest a lot of time and energy into making sure that when you're exercising or when you're performing at a competition or a race, it goes well. And so people want to make sure that all of those things that can go wrong don't go wrong. And nutrition is definitely one of them. So I work with a lot of people on optimizing that. Injury comes up too. I work with a lot of people on injury prevention, injury recovery. That's just kind of part of being active. Unfortunately, people are going to get injured the more you do it, and the harder you do it, right? And then, like I said, there are many other things that kind of come up as regarding athleticism, such as weight management and energy and like and just in unstable energy. So addressing that. Yeah, people, again, athletes are people, so I cover a lot, but with the lens that they are trying to perform the best they can.
Okay. Could you give us like some ideas, like after a race or an event, what kind of things do you suggest to help them to recover more quickly?
Yeah, I'll give you my top two. After any kind of activity, exercise, race, game, whatever the case is, hydration is my number one. You have to rehydrate. I mean, it starts there. You just sweat a lot. You stress your body out. Hydrating that body as quickly as possible is going to be really helpful. So it's not just water. Use electrolytes too. Make sure you get those really important electrolyte minerals back into your system as quickly as possible. So that's number one. And then number two is carbohydrates, which some people may be like, what, not protein? No, I not that I don't, but if I had to choose, get those carbohydrates back in, because you are burning more carbohydrates than you're burning protein, and you want to get those carbohydrates back into your system. The protein will come, and it should come, but don't ignore the carbs. We need that to start the recovery process back up again, because we just used carbs the most in that exercise or in that game or race. So those are my top two, and there's a lot more and I could dig deeper, but generally a lot of people, you know, they're tired, or if it's a big race, they might go for the beer afterwards or something with friends. Please celebrate, but hydrate and eat a banana or something, you know, really nourishing and healthy, and then go enjoy yourself.
Okay. And when you say electrolytes, you're meaning like coconut water, not the, I won't say any names, but not necessarily
coconut water's great.
The yellow or red or blue drinks that,
are kind of
synonymous with that because of advertising. I saw some drinks recently that had stevia in them and looked a little healthier. What do you think about those? I mean, I'm not going to say any of the names, but more with coconut water.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I think coconut water is great. I saw Liat, because we're on video here, so I saw you nodding your head, Liat. And yeah, I think coconut water is a tremendous natural electrolyte replacement or electrolyte rich beverage. But then, yeah, there are, you know, times, especially for athletes who sweat a lot and really stress their body out a lot, where they need something more, or they just don't like coconut water, or they're allergic to coconut. And so, you know, we have to have some alternatives in place. There are other products. You're mentioning the red, yellow, blue ones. I generally don't go for products when I'm focusing on electrolytes that are high in sugar. So I'm going to naturally stay clear of those and just have them get their carbs from foods, and then have them get their electrolyte minerals from, yes, coconut water. Sometimes there are other like tablet or powders that are out there that are low or virtually no sugar. And then it's mainly just the electrolyte minerals that they're getting in. I love trace mineral drops, so those are good options too.
Okay, thank you. Liat, in your business, what kind of challenges are your clients working on? Or if you just want to give us an example of a certain client, anonymously, of course.
Yeah, of course. So I do see a lot of the same things. Those are women, they do want to focus on their weight loss, they are bloated, they have PMS, they have skin issues like rosacea, acne, psoriasis, eczema. And of course it's all related. It's all coming from the same place, right? From the gut, from the food that we eat. However, the biggest challenge that I work with them is actually unlearning so many things that they learn out there. And sometimes it's even from health professionals that, hey, if you just lose your weight, you will feel more energy and you will be more healthy, and your autoimmune condition and diabetes and heart, you know, high blood pressure will be better. So there is a lot of misinformation that makes them feel guilty and shame for not doing the right thing. And I'm doing the air quote here because there is no right thing. you have all these health issues, just lose the weight. And most of the times they don't know that these health issues can happen with basically with any weight at any size. And there is a lot of unlearning here, because if we focus mostly on the weight, it's most of the time it's unsustainable and it's not going to last more than a few weeks or months at a time. So my work with them is more on, let's get rid of the band-aid mindset and focus on a long-term sustainable solution. We remove all the roadblocks from your way. We talked about business earlier. People sometimes disconnect food and from finances and from business and from relationship and social life. But really, how we feed our body, how we fuel our body, what type of lifestyle we live, it's all connected to everything else. You can be a high performance as an athlete in your business, be a good partner, be a good mama, be all of these things. If you are fatigued all the time and you have a brain fog and you have severe PMS and you are bound to bed 3 to 7 days a month, right? So there is a process that I walk my client through to basically unlearn and erase all the other noises that they come in with, and rebuild their relationship with food and heal it, basically.
That's very well put. I mean, I think most of us just don't realize everything is. I mean, even myself sometimes, you know, like if I'm stressed at work, right? You know, crave something, you know, sweet in the afternoon to kind of deal with the stress and the fatigue. And just, it sounds like you kind of help them reprioritize what's going to impact every area of their life, but not in a shaming way. And that's really important. I was just reading an article earlier about cervical cancer, and some women were saying, you know, they hadn't gone to the doctor for years because they, you know, were shamed, or, you know, they were, and I know we heard this in our program that it's not all physicians, of course, but, you know, sometimes they don't treat what's going on because they don't want, they think you need to lose the weight first when really there could be something else going on. So it's just like a vicious cycle. The women don't come in because they're shamed, or they can't, you know, they're shamed, and that impacts their ability to be able to move forward. So,
and the same with diet. Think mm-hmm. about all the yo-yo dieting out there and all the diet cycles that mostly women are going through. And most of them think that the worst thing is feeling guilt and shame about it. Oh, I couldn't find the right diet for me, or, you know, something is wrong with me. Why can't I make this happen? And it's not even about that. It's the heart, like their thyroid is going to be damaged from this, and depends what type of diet they're trying. They're going to add more stress to their adrenal, especially if they are fasting or doing all this kind of fasting-like type of diets. Mm-hmm. And eventually their metabolism rate will slow down, they will gain more weight, they will feel more frustrated about it. Autoimmune conditions will knock on their door and say, hey, something is not well here, because there is a chronic inflammation that is going on. It's all because we're being taught, and the conversation is out there being focused on the completely wrong thing. It's not your weight that you can't control. It's the other areas that are going on in your life that we need to check what's going on. How do we prioritize things?
Right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it can be kind of daunting to make lifestyle changes with stress. So it sounds like you're offering the person a way to kind of deconstruct that and figure out a plan. Like you said, a long-term plan. It's not going to happen overnight.
You definitely didn't get there overnight. So
right.
It's not going to go disappear overnight.
But that's everyone's dream, isn't it? No, I think that's great. Yeah, I think that was something I really appreciated about our program, that they did, you know, talk about, like you're saying, unlearning things or what food means to you, and also not just, you know, having everyone lose weight before you'll do anything else with them. I was really impressed with that in our program. What are some specific things that come up around plant-based nutrition? Do either of you have clients who come in who aren't already plant-based and want to go plant-based?
I would actually say that the majority of my clients are not plant-based. They, whether they're on some journey towards it, or they have experience with it, or they have no interest in it, it kind of runs the spectrum. But they increasingly, I've seen, this is the trend, and I think this is the trend in society, so it makes sense, is that increasingly they have either experience in using or kind of turning to more plant-based products. So I'm seeing a lot of people, for example, aren't drinking dairy milks, but mm-hmm. they're not focusing maybe consciously, but for whatever reason, again, maybe it's a societal trend, but, you know, a lot of plant-based milks are being replaced or substituted in for dairy milks. I sometimes even see people, increasingly so, like, they are plant-based, they eat red meat, they eat everything animal, and then they also will throw in tempeh and sauerkraut, and I love that. It's more rare, but I like seeing that they are, they're exposed to these other kinds of more plant-based, wholesome foods that we all know and love, because it does kind of make my job a little bit easier in getting them to embrace more of these anti-inflammatory and really nourishing foods that come from plants. But it is an education for a lot of people, even if they have a lot of experience. They're probably coming to me because it didn't work for them, or there's still something to address, clearly. So a lot of it is around education, talking about certain foods, what it's doing to their body, how much to eat, how much, maybe some foods that aren't working well for them. They're clearly reacting to it, and maybe it'll work for them later, but we need to address why their body's reacting to it now. And then we can kind of bring that food back. I see that a lot with beans and legumes, for example, and sometimes nuts and seeds. These are all really wholesome foods, but some people, just based on perhaps where their gut health is at the moment, are just really reactive to those foods. And so it can kind of be a frustrating mixed message. They want to eat really healthy, but their body is not really letting them. And I just have to kind of show them and teach them and have that conversation as to that your body's not rejecting eating healthy, but there is this underlying issue that needs to be addressed first before we can kind of bring back certain foods or go really high fiber or something like that. So I will say, and then I can let Leah chime in here, but increasingly people coming in or me having that conversation, it's getting easier and easier as the years go on. More people are hearing, whether it's vegan or plant-based or whole food plant-based, more people are in the culture are popularizing this. Sometimes it has its negatives, but I think overall, there are people, the conversation is easier to have. And people, even like, I've heard of kimchi, I've never had it, but I've heard of it. It's like, oh, great. But then it kind of, the walls come down, and then you can have a really good conversation that follows. Yeah. Leah, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm like you, Will. I mean, a lot of my clients are not vegan or not on plant-based diet at all. They don't even know what it means. And they do have the curiosity about it. They do have the intention. But just as you said, it depends where they are starting. If they have some kind of SIBO, which is small intestine bacterial overgrowth, we will need to take it step by like very small steps, right, to introduce legumes and high fiber type of foods. And for me, because I do the food relationship component, I do not put any of my clients on any restrictive diet or any specific rules. Yes, I am vegan. I do practice whole food plant-based diet. It will always be my recommendation, but I think that the way you get there can be different for each and every person. And for some people, just as Will mentioned, they may never be able to do it, maybe because they don't want to. There are some health issues, underlying health issues, or other reasons. Yes, my recommendation will be like, hey, let's add more of these things, but it will not come from a place like, let's eliminate all the animal products out of your diet, because then we create an overwhelming feeling. And the next thing that will happen is that we set up the client for failure. And
Right.
again, guilt and shame.
Right. I think everybody's journey is different. So you both are saying sometimes there's some like healing in the gut that needs to go on before beans or other high fiber foods are able to be tolerated for some people.
Correct. And sometimes they're like, I use, for example, some kind of tests to see what's going on in the gut. And that is very helpful for the clients to see, hey, there is really nothing wrong with my mind or my mindset. There is actually like, they can actually see what's going on in their gut and helping them creating that action plan to get them better and get where they want to be, whether it's fully go vegan or be somewhere in the middle.
Okay. What about like lentils or mung beans. I kind of remembering those are a little easier to digest. Does that help? Is that a good starting place for some people?
I think it depends. I think that's been my experience, well, personally, but then also through recommendations to clients and figuring out if it's safe to kind of test legumes like continuously or even just some other food. But I think regardless of the actual food or food group that is kind of presenting as a challenge for people, I've just seen that it depends on the person. Sometimes as easy as it might be for some people to say, yeah, I can do lentils, but I can't do black beans. Some people it's no, they can't do anything, any kind of legume. So yeah, as you might imagine, just because someone's, for example, presenting, as Liat said, we'll use the SIBO example, it doesn't mean that everyone's in the same place with that SIBO diagnosis and with their SIBO recovery. Or, when you do the test, like Liat's talking about, people have different kind of issues that are that are happening in the body internally. So it's kind of, and this is why having someone to work with is so great, because can you imagine how, and I see it all the time, having to figure all that out by yourself. Then you just say, oh, I guess I can't do beans. Oh, I guess I can't do nuts and seeds. And wheat eventually is probably going to be something that they have to eliminate. And there goes wheat, every kind of wheat food. And increasingly, people are reactive to foods, and their health kind of dwindles over time, especially when they do this by themselves. It causes a lot of stress. So having someone there to support you and tell you, as Liat said, this isn't your mind. You're clearly intentional. You clearly want to heal. You clearly are invested. But there is a deep problem that needs to be addressed, and having a support person to guide you through that can make all the difference, especially for these chronic issues that people are dealing with more and more these days, particularly autoimmune conditions.
Yeah, I'm glad there's some tests that can give you some direction, but then your expertise comes in, and also, hearing about their history, and everybody has a different biology, so very individualized.
And if I may add, it's not just the testings, it's sometimes to have somebody to break it, to break the plan up for you, so you know where to start. Will said that some people remove the legumes, remove the wheat, remove the sugar. Before they know it, they have like five or six foods that they can eat, and they don't know why their body can't tolerate anything else. So sometimes taking few steps back, figuring out what's going on, and do things the right way can actually expand the options that they can introduce into their diet and basically have, more enjoyment from food.
Yeah, the food freedom. They get their food freedom back.
Yeah, that must be such a relief. Like, here you keep eliminating things and thinking, you're not going to ever be able to eat those again, and to be able to reintroduce them at some, or at least some of them. That would be great. I wanted to touch a little bit upon like nutritionists versus dietitian, and I think there's, I mean, I know there's more leniency, especially in certain states. That a person can call themselves a nutritionist, and sometimes seems like there's a little contention there. I just kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit, and some of the strides that, especially like us who are master level educated and have other experience and education, how we can, be nutritionists and be more recognized for that. Leah, would you mind telling us like a little bit what's going on? And I'm
I
sorry.
was going to say, Leah, take it away, because Leah has been pioneering this in our community, and I guess you could even say for the state. I think that's I think it can. I think you can say that. So, Leah, go ahead. This
I proudly say it. Not just say
is.
it, I proudly say it. So yeah, I am a nutritionist. I have the CNS, which is the board certified nutrition specialist certification, right? And I am a licensed dietitian. This is a recent thing. So I can speak to both of the areas. By the way, as a side note, I do feel that the CNS is a little bit more superior than the registered dietitian title, because it does require more education and more experience. That being said, unfortunately, there are some politics around that. So yes, we are where we are. We are. Which one is better? Here is my thought, and this is my personal opinion. I think that whether it's a dietitian or a nutritionist, they can both be very, very good or very, very bad. And it's not even related to education, it's just related to what type of solution that person offers, how much experience they have, who they help with, whether it's, again, the band-aid solution, like the cheap, here are some foods that you can try, and here are how many calories you should eat, and good luck with your journey, or somebody that can actually understand what you're going through, break down the plan for you, and take you step by step for a more sustainable and more success in your health journey. So it's, for me, it's less about registered dietitian versus nutritionist. It's versus the band-aid solution versus the long-term solution. And some people say, hey, this is what I hear. Do you take insurance? Or I would like to use my insurance. And to be honest, at the beginning, especially at the beginning of my business, that felt a little bit like, oh, I wish I could build the insurance, because when I was only a nutritionist, I wasn't able to do it. And I felt really bad. I felt like business is being taken away from me. But then I discovered from clients who came to see me later and said, you know what? I've tried the registered dietitian. I tried to use my insurance. I get nowhere with it because I don't get the information that I need. I don't get the support that I need. So I feel less bad about that now. And I found that people are, those who are willing to pay for something that is more sustainable will highly, most likely will see better results. That is my opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I was looking at from the other way, like when I was deciding, you know, I was much more drawn to like, you know, NUNM's program because it was more holistic and they had the naturopath program, and it, you know, that was felt like what I wanted to do versus, you know, just, yeah, I think sometimes some of the dietitian programs stick more with the government recommendations. And obviously as a vegan, I don't agree with those. And again, this is my personal thoughts on it. So, but I mean, I kind of feel like I got the message that, oh, you know, from, you know, when I tried to talk to some people in the field, like, oh, well, you know, that's, you know, like nutritionists didn't have as much, but I guess I wanted to put out there that, you know, you just have to look at the person's qualifications and not just assume one is better than the other. You have to find the right fit for you. But I guess someone who's worked in mental health for decades, I guess I would like to take insurance because I would feel like I, you know, didn't want to leave people out. But I know that insurance also comes with its own set of headaches. So kind of, I mean, I would like to maybe do both if it was possible. Because so some people might not be able to afford it without it.
I totally hear you, and I don't mean to steal Will's time here. Just quick note here. This is not about the insurance. By the way, you mentioned registered dietitian, take insurance, and following a government guideline. Many dietitians out there will go with their, oh, you want to lose weight? Here are how many calories you should eat. So instead of the regular Coke, drink the Diet Coke, and you can eat, you know, fat-free, whatever type of processed foods that is low with calorie, that will go great with your diet. and not looking at the longer effect of those kind of recommendations. And on the other hand, nutritionists that will never make those kind of recommendations and go with whole food type of recommendations will create a different type of damage within the shape of food shaming. Oh, you dare to drink the soda or to eat the cookies, this is horrible for you. So there could be negative sides in both directions. Exactly. I'm not sure if I said it right.
Right, you're right. I think the key thing, as we touched on earlier, is finding that person who is, you know, an expert and passionate about the kind of help that you need for your body and for your mind. As well, you said, mm-hmm. you have to unlearn a lot of things that we've learned.
Yeah, I would add to this, because it's a riveting conversation and topic, really, is for people who are seeking the support, you, especially if you've had a bad experience before. You know, as Liat's saying, if you were the person who was told to count all your calories or to count all your macronutrients and that's how you're going to lose weight, or you were shamed, you know, when you had a cookie and, you know, you're clearly on a low sugar or no sugar cleanse or something, and that, you know, that shame was brought into the experience, then, you know, you might be someone who wants to pay a little bit more attention to where the next person that you go to bring in help with, where they got their education or where they got their training. Because if you see, and I don't mean to say that where they got their education means everything for the person, but if you do need to do that research because you want to feel more supported, and you see that that organization doesn't really align with what you know will be more supportive for you, then maybe you want to look elsewhere. And again, that's kind of speaking to whomever the credential or whatever the credential is, or whatever the background. Right. Melissa, like you're saying, that's speaking to does that person one, is that person reputable, and is that person qualified? Did they get a proper education? But then also speaking to the way that they practice and what they preach. You know, nowadays there's so much information out there on people's websites and videos and social media that you can really get a sense for that person just by kind of taking that time. And just hopefully, you know, in that process, you just find the right person for you. And as Liat said, it could be a registered dietitian, it could be a nutritionist, it could be some other kind of certified health coach. Ultimately, I think ideally they're within the scope of practice, but then also they're just a really good person who's going to pay attention to you as a person and provide some really sound, you know, credible, supportive guidance in your journey.
Exactly. I'm just also, though, excited that the CNS is gaining steam, because it seems kind of, you know, when there's only one option that, you know, like RDs, seemed like if you wanted to get a job at a hospital or something like that, it seems kind of odd that there's one option, you know, because I came from mental health. So there's, you know, you could be a licensed counselor, you can be a marriage and family, you can be a psychologist. Like, I was like, why is there only one path? So it's really exciting to see that gaining steam, and Liat, that you found ways to get certification, and you pass that information on to us, so we can go that path if that's what we want to do too.
Yeah, certification and licensure, because really, mm-hmm. if you have all the requirements, why can't you? Where is this discrimination coming from, right? And this is how my angle worked.
Right. Yeah. It's like you said earlier too, it's politics. Anyway, we are running low on time, so I'm going to go ahead and shift gears to see if you just had a few tips. I think you've kind of integrated them in the show, but any tips that you would have given or would maybe give for people who want to move toward a whole food plant-based diet?
Yeah, there are so many. I mean, you're right, we probably touched on a few, and there are so many more that we could give, and of course we don't have time, but I would say when it comes to whole food plant-based and generally just people increasing these kinds of foods in their diet, what I generally recommend is to embrace going slow. There's no rush. Sometimes rushing worsens the problem. And specifically the reason for that, at least that I tend to highlight and educate on, is fiber, because it can cause some people gastrointestinal distress. And that can be really uncomfortable for people. That can be a big barrier when people experience that. And if you go way too fast in increasing a lot of these foods, because we are looking at high fiber foods when we're talking about whole food plant-based, for people, especially from like standard American diet or standard kind of developed society diets, it is sometimes increasingly more in engineered foods. And so there's less and less fiber in the diet. So when you completely flip that switch too fast, it can present some issues. So I tend to tell people to take it step by step. You know, if you don't really eat any beans and you don't eat any other food groups, start with one food group and just slowly increase it, maybe every other day in small portions. You know, you don't have to do going from basically no fiber to a salad at every meal and, you know, beans in every meal and just kind of, again, you'll get there, but take your time and I think you'll be more successful. And then the other thing I'll say, and Liat, I'm sure you'll have tips, is embrace other food groups and eat a more varied diet. You know, kind of challenge yourself to experience something different. You know, a lot of us, we know rice and it's, if you're animals, it's, you know, chicken or turkey or maybe some pork chops. And then, you know, it's potatoes and corn and maybe some green beans. And a lot of people live in, you know, very, very narrow kind of food circle. And I think the biggest benefits come from when you start to break out of that circle and embrace foods from many different food groups, and even within those food groups, many different foods. So a lot of different fruits and more than three vegetables, expand to 10, expand to 15. The gut will definitely be the better for a greater diversity in your food.
Makes sense. And Liat, you have a tip for us before we acknowledge you guys give your websites after that?
Yeah, I think we all kind of covered everything. Like, take it slow. Just like you don't expect to start first grade with the same knowledge you end up at 12th grade, you are not going to have all the knowledge out there when you're first starting with a vegan or plant-based diet. I suggest that start with some kind of exercises, try one recipe at a time, master it, try to see what you like and what you don't, especially if you never tried those before. Like, expand your taste buds, right? Just look at it as some kind of fun experiment and slowly increase your staples with recipes and products that you like.
Yeah, you might have to try things a few times before you get used to. Yeah, what is your website if people wanted to learn more about what you do?
So they can find me at fabuloushealing.com.
And
And
you're on Instagram and Facebook
yeah,
also, right?
Fabulous Healing on Facebook, and on Instagram it's fabulous underscore healing.
Okay, and Will, what's your website?
Yeah, so my business is On Pace Wellness, and my website is just onpacewellness.com. And I'm, for the most part, most active on Instagram. There's a Facebook page too, but and my Instagram is at On Pace Wellness. So pretty much On Pace Wellness wherever you look.
Okay, great. Well, thank you both so much for being on here. I think, as always on this show, I always learn a lot, and it was great to reconnect with you and have these discussions.
Yeah,
Thank you.
thank you, Melissa. Really appreciate it. Good to reconnect.
Definitely. And I will include these websites on the KBOO page, the episode page for this show on That Vegan Show. And then I just wanted to remind everyone that this weekend, the Portland Vegan Night Market is coming back on Saturday night from 4 to 9 on Southeast Hawthorne. So I will also put a link on my episode page if you're driving now and can't go to your Facebook page. Please don't do that. You can catch